Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Phil Dierking, Bruce Alpert, and Marcia James. Later, Katie Weaver will bring us this week's Personal Technology Report. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
Over 7 months have passed since Panamanian officials launched an expansion of the world-famous Panama Canal. Officials agreed to the expansion so that many of the world's largest cargo ships could easily pass through the canal. Yet the Associated Press reports the $5.25 billion project has problems. It says ships continue to rub against the canal's walls and wear out defenses designed to protect both shipping and the waterway. The Panama Canal has been in operation for more than a century. The United States completed the canal in 1914. The waterway remained under U.S. control until the end of 1999, when it was given to Panama. The canal links two oceans, the Atlantic and the Pacific, through a system of locks. The locks are like steps. They raise and lower ships from one part of the waterway to another on their trip from ocean to ocean. With the old locks, which are still in use, large ships would be tied to powerful locomotives on both sides. These engines help to keep the ships in the center of the canal. In the new locks, the ships are tied to tugboats. One tugboat is tied to the front of the ship, with the other tied to the back. These boats then guide the ships through the canal. At first, pilots of the cargo ships and tugboat operators would sometimes try to rub the boats against the canal walls as a way to keep the ships straight. But this caused damage to rubber padding lining the walls. In one case, a ship called Ever Living tried to pass through the canal when one of the massive steel lock doors failed to open all the way. The ship's pilots and tugboat captains decided to continue using the tugboats to guide the ship through the narrowed passageway. But to avoid the stuck door, the ship came dangerously close to the side of the lock walls. "These are things that shouldn't happen," tugboat captain Mauricio Perez said. "Sometimes, the only thing we can do is pray." Even before the expanded canal opened in June 2016, tugboat operators had expressed concern about the new system. Many asked for more training. "The fears and dangers remain, although the boats are going through," Perez said. The Panama Canal Authority reports that, between June and January 2017, there were only 15 incidents that resulted in damage to locks or ships. That represents about 2% of the 700 times ships have sailed through the expanded canal. Officials say the first 7 months have been a learning process, but they remain hopeful. Manuel Benitez, deputy administrator of the canal, said it has been pretty positive the way our people have been able to navigate that learning curve. Benitez felt that the problems that have been reported were not enough to affect the operation of the locks. Still, many ships are carrying containers with goods, and any delay because of an accident can cost them money. In perhaps the most serious incident, a Chinese ship hit a lock wall a few weeks after the expanded canal opened and made a hole in the side of the ship. This forced a delay in the trip. The canal authority did not say how much money is being spent on repairing the new rubber bumpers. Captains who navigate the canal say the defenses were expected to last at least a few years before they wear out. Pilots have argued they should be replaced with a system of floating bumpers like those used in some European locks. Officials say they plan to continue operating with the current system of defenses, but changes could happen in the future. Thanks to the expertise of our practices, these incidents are happening less and less, Benitez said. There have been important improvements to operations at the Panama Canal, according to the Associated Press. Tugboat pilots say average travel time through the canal has dropped to 2.5 to 3 hours. It was 4 hours when the locks first opened. With experience, captains have become more at ease taking ships straight down the center of the locks, especially when weather conditions are good. But it's still a delicate operation. As the 334-meter-long Everlong moved into the 426-meter lock chamber, workers tied the ship against the walls to keep it in place while it waited to move to the next lock. The tight space left little room for the tugboats, both in front of and behind the ship. Tugboat captains still fear their boats could be crushed against the walls if things get out of control during bad weather. Captains also regret that no wall was built at the entry to the Pacific Ocean side. They say such a wall would help to keep the ship straight and protect them from fast water currents. This is where the Chinese ship had its accident. I'm Phil Dierking.
Andrew Puzder has withdrawn as President Donald Trump's nominee for Labor Secretary. Just a day earlier, Michael Flynn resigned from his position as National Security Advisor. Puzder faced united Democratic opposition. And some Senate Republicans were concerned that he employed an undocumented worker as a housekeeper. Flynn's departure came just 24 days into the Trump administration. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said Flynn, a retired general, lost the trust of the president. David Greenberg is a historian at Rutgers University in New Jersey. He said he couldn't remember any recent high-level White House official losing his job so quickly. Flynn's departure is notable for how quickly it occurred. But all recent presidents have asked top administration officials to resign. Some, like Puzder, did not get to serve even one day in the job for which they were nominated. The last three presidents, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton, all pulled back important nominations after questions were raised about their choices. For Obama, it was his first choice for health secretary. For Bush, it was a nominee for the Supreme Court. And for Clinton, it was his first two choices for attorney general.
President George H.W. Bush, who served just before Clinton, wanted former Senator John Tower to be his defense secretary. But the Senate defeated his nomination. His second choice, Richard Cheney, won Senate approval. Here are some examples of high-ranking officials forced to give up top jobs in recent presidential administrations. In April 2014, President Obama's health secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, resigned following a troubled start of the national health law known as Obamacare. Another resignation came from Eric Shinseki, who was forced to leave as Veterans Affairs Secretary after employees hid long wait times for medical care. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld resigned from President George W. Bush's cabinet in 2006. Rumsfeld's departure was a sign the war in Iraq was not going well, said Greenberg, the Rutgers University history professor.
President Clinton's Surgeon General, Joycelyn Elders, was forced to resign. She had called for study of legalizing some illegal drugs and making birth control available at public schools. Two other top health officials resigned to protest a Clinton decision. They said a welfare reform law approved by the president would hurt poor people. President George H.W. Bush asked his chief of staff, John Sununu, to step down after complaints he was too hard on White House officials, and news reports that he used military airplanes for personal trips. Two of President Ronald Reagan's national security advisors, John Poindexter and Robert McFarlane, resigned over the Iran-Contra scandal. It involved the sale of weapons to Iran, with money going to help arm Contra rebels in Nicaragua. Congress had blocked federal money for the rebel effort. Reagan's national security aide, Oliver North, was also forced out over the Iran-Contra scandal. Another high-level resignation came in 1982. Secretary of State Alexander Haig stepped down, saying he disagreed with some of Reagan's foreign policy decisions. Haig is most remembered for declaring, "As of now, I am in control here in the White House," after the 1981 assassination attempt against Reagan.
Burt Lance was budget director under President Jimmy Carter. He resigned after questions were raised about loans and other decisions he made while running a bank in the state of Georgia. Gerald Terhorst was a press secretary for President Gerald Ford. He resigned to protest Ford's decision to pardon former President Richard Nixon. The pardon freed Nixon from facing criminal charges for the Watergate scandal. The biggest resignation of President Richard Nixon's presidency was his own. Nixon resigned in 1974 after Congress was ready to remove him from office for covering up the break-in at Democratic headquarters in Washington's Watergate complex. The Watergate scandal also forced other Nixon aides to resign.
Most people who give up top White House jobs continue to praise the president. In a statement, Andrew Puzder said he was honored to have been considered for the position of Labor Secretary. And he praised Trump for helping to put America's workers and businesses back on a path to sustainable prosperity. Flynn also said he had been honored to serve President Trump. He credited Trump with helping to bring back America's leadership position in the world. According to a White House report on presidential history, before Flynn, the earliest resignation of a national security advisor was William Jackson. He lost the job 4 months after President Dwight Eisenhower appointed him. Henry Kissinger held the job the longest, from 1969 to 1975, under Presidents Nixon and Ford.
Chuhin Dosh is a writer, activist, and poet. In a quiet, melodious voice, he shares a part of a poem.
I don't know how I can express myself as feelings become obtuse from fear. Soldiers of darkness caught me like an animal and butchered me. In dreams, you know the feelings of dreaming are like a reality. It is midnight in my Bangladesh. The darkness.
Chuhin Dosh is from Bangladesh, but he lives now in exile. Forced to leave his home in April 2016, Chuhin Dosh sought refuge at City of Asylum, Pittsburgh, a sanctuary for endangered writers.
I left my country in an extreme situation, and I came here not only for security. I came here for freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of writing, and freedom for living a certain way.
Born and raised in Barisal, Bangladesh, Chuhin Dosh loved to read poems. Chuhin began writing his own poems when he was in seventh grade. Some of his works were featured in a local children's magazine.
Basically, I write poetry.
Basically, I will write poetry because that is my voice, my soul voice. I wrote a few rhymes like children's poetry. They were published in children's magazines.
Chuhin Dosh says he continued with poetry, but also started writing other things, like short stories. However, he says, in the 1980s, things changed in his country. A military dictator took control and established Islamic rule. Chuhin Dosh says he began to write more serious articles as a witness to the rise of fundamentalism.
When I started writing articles,
basically our community in Bangladesh was 94% Muslims, and they did not think writing is good because some feelings hurt them. I wrote against war crimes, some war criminals in our country, and they are still in our country, and they are doing their job. They were never condemned, so for that, we wrote against them.
However, freedom of expression came at a cost for Chuhin Dosh.
Right now, there are local collaborators
of 1971, and right now in our country, there are a lot of their supporters. So when we wrote against them and their supporters, sometimes online, they personally threatened us.
To save his own life, Chuhin Dosh left Bangladesh. Since 2013, Dosh has been the target of fundamentalist groups who have murdered free-thinking bloggers, writers, and editors. In Bangladesh, writers are being persecuted under the country's Information and Technology Communication Law, instead of protecting Tuhin. The police collected and searched his writings for anti-Islamic statements to use against him. City of Asylum Pittsburgh has given exiled writer Tuhin Dosh a refuge.
I think a lot of bad things
have happened in our country, and already 16 writers are murdered by the extremists. So right now, I am feeling safe here. I am writing a novel about the social structure of my country, basically the Islamization of my country.
Tuhin Dosh appreciates the community support he is receiving. He joined the Greater Pittsburgh Literary Society, where he is learning the English language and about American culture. His work has continued to appear in Bangladesh. In his native language, Bengali, Dosh has authored 7 poetry books. He has served as editor of several literary magazines, written short stories, and published columns in his home country. He says his proudest accomplishment is the founding of a popular magazine called The Wild. However, Tuhin Dosh says he misses his Bangladeshi home and hopes one day to return there.
I love my country.
I love my country and also my family, my parents and my nephew and my sisters and a lot of friends. I think the situation of my country will be good and I will come back to my country. I hope that.
I'm Marcia James.
Has your Facebook news feed become a mass of political stories, unwanted videos, and angry rants? Are you wishing for the days when your feed was filled with posts from friends you care about the most? The good news is that you can fix your Facebook news feed to show more posts that interest you and fewer that do not. By taking just a few minutes to fix your feed, you may be able to enjoy Facebook again. No need to unfriend anyone. Just set your feed to see what you want to see and hide what you do not want to see. Facebook lets you choose which friends' posts show at the top of your news feed. Maybe you have dear friends who do not post often, but you want to be sure you see their posts first. Or maybe you have Facebook friends you have never even met in real life, but they post interesting quotes or fun travel photos you look forward to seeing. You can easily choose whose posts you want to see first by changing your news feed settings. On the Facebook website, tap the down arrow in the upper right corner of the blue bar at the top of the screen. Then, choose News Feed Preferences. Then, click on Prioritize Who to See First. Choose the names of people whose posts you want to see at the top of your news feed. The final step is to click Done at the bottom. You may be best friends with someone in real life, but have no interest in their Facebook posts. Maybe they post angry messages or childish videos. Facebook lets you secretly block friends' posts from your feed. No one will know you blocked them unless you tell them. The process is simple. Tap the down arrow in the upper right corner of the blue bar at the top of the Facebook page. Then choose News Feed Preferences. Next, choose Unfollow People to hide their posts. Then, mark the friends you want to unfollow. This will prevent their posts from appearing in your news feed. When you are finished blocking, just tap Done. Some days are best forgotten. But Facebook might remind you about those bad days with its On This Day feature. On This Day can be a wonderful reminder of happy events. But sad anniversaries may be difficult enough without Facebook reminding you about them. You can turn off all reminders or block people and dates from On This Day. To adjust the settings, go to the Facebook On This Day page. Click Preferences in the upper right side of the page. You can choose people and dates you do not want to be reminded of. Facebook lets you choose individual dates or a wide period. If you do not want to see any On This Day reminders ever, choose a period from the day you joined Facebook to a date in the future. If you do not want to see political posts, you can add an extension to your Chrome browser. The extension Remove All Politics from Facebook was started during the U.S. presidential campaign last year and was updated earlier this month. The extension for Chrome looks for keywords related to U.S. politics. Then it blocks posts containing those words from your Facebook news feed. You cannot change the keywords that are blocked by the extension. After the extension has been added, click its icon in your Chrome toolbar. You will see a list of keywords that will cause a post to be blocked from your Facebook news feed. To start using Remove All Politics from Facebook, slide the switch to On and restart your Chrome browser. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.